One of the scribes came near and heard Jesus and the others disputing with one another. And seeing that Jesus answered them well, he asked him, "Which commandment is the first of all?" Jesus answered, "The first is, 'Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul, with all your mind and with all your strength.' The second is this, 'You shall love your neighbor as yourself.' There is no commandment greater than these." And the scribe said to him, you are right, teacher. You have truly said that he is one, and besides him, there is no other. And to love him with all the heart and with all the understanding and all the strength, and to love one's neighbor as oneself, this is much more important than all burnt offerings and sacrifices." When Jesus saw that he answered wisely, he said to him, "You are not far from the kingdom of God." After that, no one dared to ask Jesus any question. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
The scribe didn't dare ask him any other question. Who can blame him? Jesus answered the final interrogation in a way that no one could refute. What is the summary of our religion? Which of the 613 Jewish commandments is the greatest of all? Which one comes first? And Jesus says, "Love God. Love God with everything you are and all that you have." And without so much as taking a breath, he tags on a second commandment from Leviticus 19. "You shall love the neighbor as much as you love yourself." It is a stunning answer. It cannot be argued against. Those who teach the faith will divide the Ten Commandments in exactly this way. The first four commandments are about loving God. No other gods, no attempts to capture God in an image, no misuse of God's name, and remember your creation and redemption by making a complete day for God every week. The remaining six commandments constitute loving the neighbor. Honor your parents, for they are your closest neighbors. Don't take your neighbor's life. Don't take your neighbor's spouse. Don't take your neighbor's stuff. Don't lie nor distort the truth about your neighbor. Don't desire anything your neighbor possesses. There it is. Love God, love the neighbor. The scribe babbles back in astonishment and says, "If you keep these, yes, your life will be far greater than trying to earn your way into God's good graces by lighting a candle or sacrificing a sheep or smoking up some incense or writing a check or sitting in a long committee meeting." That God looks upon the heart, the soul, the mind, the strength. And what God is looking for is any evidence of love. Love returned back to God, who is the source of love, the essence of love, and love extended to the neighbor. The scribe who came to interrogate Jesus says, "You are right, teacher." And then Jesus says something a bit quizzical. "And buddy, you're not far from the kingdom of God." I've always pictured him saying that with a smirk on his face. "You're not far." How far is not far? Would the scribe be a little closer if he hadn't come to interrogate Jesus, if he hadn't come to pile on with the Pharisees, the Sadducees, the Herodians, and all the others who've been picking at Jesus the last week of his life? Would he have been a little closer to the kingdom if he wasn't a scribe? Because you see, this is the Gospel of Mark, and Mark's always kicking the scribes. He says that Jesus makes fun of the scribes, and the crowd enjoys that. Then he warns about the scribes, how they prance around in their long robes and sit up front and claim the good seats and then fleece the widow's estates. Not much love of neighbor there, nor love of God. You see, it's possible to quote the Bible and then get it wrong. You can agree, love God, love neighbor, without actually ever loving anybody. You ever notice that? The unnamed scribe can recognize the truth of the Bible's greatest commandments, but he must live those commandments if he wishes to be drawn closer to God and accept God's rule over his life. Flip a couple pages forward in the Gospel of Mark, and we discover that the scribes are in the thick of the controversy about Jesus. They are in the inner sanctum of the religious professionals when Jesus is arrested and condemned. The scribes are in that group that hand Jesus over to Pontius Pilate. The scribes, the Bible scholars, the scribes stand among those who make fun of the Christ when he's on the cross. It is one thing to know that God teaches us to love. It's another thing to love. And the distance between is not far. So whom do you love? And whom do you find difficult to love? Loving God may sound difficult because, at least on the surface, nobody can see God. Through the ages, some people have heard God speak, and they've written down some of what they've heard in a book. And then if they hear that teaching and keep it, it's a way to love the Lord. If they show up regularly in the places where God continues to teach, it's another way to love the Lord. But I think I saw love most in a lady with purple eyes. I don't remember her name now. I just remember her from childhood. She had purple eyes. At least they look purple to me. She seemed to just understand what God is all about. See an acorn and she'd say, "Look, God's making another tree." If you're feeling down and out, she'd slide over to you, put her arm around you, give you a squeeze, and say, "God is here among us." And whenever the organ would crank up and the organist would floor it, she would know the hymn and she would lose herself in singing. She would empty her soul to a God she couldn't even see. And I think that's the first time I ever understood, even if we can't see God, we can love him. We can give ourselves to him without holding anything back. And when we love God, we are pretty close to the kingdom. But loving one another whom we can see, now you'd think that'd be a lot easier, right? Here they are, right in front of us, available for us to love. That's easy, right? No, that's not easy at all. People have warts, and you get to see them if you get close. People have opinions and differences. And if you think for a moment that it's possible to love the God we cannot see without loving the person we can see, we have the reformer Dorothy Day to remind us, "I really only love God as much as I love the person I love the least." So maybe you saw the story this week in the Washington Post. Just a week ago, in Pittsburgh's Allegheny General Hospital, they wheeled into the emergency room the gunman who had just shot up the Tree of Life Synagogue. He had taken some bullets in the gunfight, and when they brought him in, he was still yelling, "Death to the Jews!" And a man in a white coat came up to him and said, "Hi, I'm Dr. Cohen. I'm here to take care of you." He's president of the hospital. As Dr. Cohen explained, "We are here to take care of sick people. We're not here to judge people. We're not here to ask, do you have insurance or not? We're here to take care of people who need our help." And as one reporter observed, "It is a stark reminder that there is something more powerful than caring only for one's own. It's a radical demonstration of humanity." Now, where did Dr. Cohen learn this? at the Tree of Life Synagogue, where he is a member, and where he lives across the street. In the same neighborhood where Mr. Rogers once lived, he heard the gunfire, and when he heard it, he decided they might need him, so he went to the hospital. An FBI agent watched how Mr. Cohen greeted the gunman, how he sat down next to him, equal level, how he talked to him and tried to understand him, and then how he handed them off to his best medical professionals to dress the wounds. The agent said, "I don't think I could have done what you've just done." Dr. Cohen nodded in understanding, and he just did it anyway. For we have all been created in the image of God, with the grand design to love God and to love one another. And if we do not love as Cohen loves, as Christ loves, we become captives to the power of death. Do you see what's at stake? So let me just say it. This is why we support the church. Like the synagogue, the church teaches us to love God and love one another. I don't hear that message so much anywhere else. And when we teach it, it's not merely to teach this as a concept or an idea, but as a life-giving, life-saving practice. Did you hear the text Stuart read from Deuteronomy 6? "So that your days may be long and that you might flourish." By loving. If we don't have someone or something greater than ourselves to give ourselves to, life grows cold, love grows stingy, we fall into isolation without purpose, never tasting joy, cut off from the very gifts that God provides for our well-being. The antidote is to love. The other day, Wednesday, we welcomed Sister Cor Immaculata, that remarkable sculptor and artist from Marywood. Two of her prints are still hanging in the session room. She's teaching a Wednesday class called Alive to Beauty, and you can still catch her, in fact, the next two Wednesday nights at 6:15. She's remarkable. Here's one of her great lines from this week. "True spirituality is always directed towards somebody else." By that she meant toward God or toward neighbor. For what really is spirituality but falling in love? Week after week, day after day, that is exactly the church's invitation to you and to me to give our hearts to God and to one another. And as we give our hearts, everything else will follow: time, treasure, talents, all. So here again, O Israel of God, the central invitation of the faith we share. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, with all your strength, and you shall love your neighbor as yourself. There is no greater word than this, no greater challenge than this, no greater blessing than this. And for all who love, you're not far from the kingdom. In fact, you're really close.